Morning, church. You can turn in your Bibles to Joshua 4. Very often in the world, as you consider different aptitudes or different attitudes, you can identify that it's sort of two kinds of people, this or that. And I've noticed a number of these and a pattern of them, and I have noticed that there's a pattern as regards technology. There are kind of two kinds of people. Most people are not sort of in the middle of the road. They either love new technology or they sort of hate it. You know, it's one or the other. Most people aren't in the middle. Most people sort of fall into love it or hate it. I tend to be one of those people who hates it. I hate things new. I just can't stand it. I remember one day one of the teens here, you know how teenagers are with the whole technology thing. They love that stuff, right? And somebody saw my cell phone, and he said, "They still make those." And he was looking at it like he picked up a dinosaur bone or something, you know? And I remember years ago, my wife was using my cell phone, and I guess it was probably 6 years ago. She was using my cell phone, and she accidentally ran over it with the car, which happens, apparently. And she went online and found the exact same out-of-date phone I was using and bought that online. You couldn't get it in stores anymore, and gave me this phone that looked exactly, you know, because I hate anything new. I just do. I am technology resistant. It's a polite term to put it. What it really means is I'm going to turn into one of those old guys who uses phrases like "back in my day." Back in my day, we didn't need any engines, you know, that sort of thing. And Adam is exactly the opposite. Adam's always got the new, I call them toys, because I refuse to take them seriously. Adam's got this new thing, you know. I just tend to be one of those guys. I remember years ago when I was working in an optical shop, I was making glasses, and I had learned to make glasses on what was really a traditional piece of technology. It had been around a very, very long time, and I noticed one in an optical shop I was in, and I was glad to see that they're still using it. It's called a water wheel. And what you would do is when you were cutting a lens to size, or sometimes when you use them for polishing, those kinds of things, is if you wanted to cut a lens to size to fit in the frame, you'd use what was called a water wheel. And it worked sort of like when you go to have a key made at the hardware store. You would mount the lens, you would mount a pattern, and you would work it down. And the thing is, you could cut any lens you wanted on a water wheel. Glass lens, plastic lens, polycarbonate lens, whatever you wanted, you could use on a water wheel. And I remember we got this new piece of technology, and it was a dry system. And it would only cut one lens. It would only cut a plastic lens. And I remember saying to the guy, I'm like, "Why do we need to learn this? It only cuts one lens. This cuts everything. This is new." In other words, this is new and I hate it. And so I had to learn this new piece of technology. But the fact is, when left myself, I would always go back to the water wheel. The thing is, some people like the new thing, some people hate it. But regardless of what's new, there is something valuable in being properly grounded in the past. And I will admit to you, I am not naturally prone to be properly grounded in the past. In my mind, to be grounded in the past is to do things as they always have done them and as I have always done them. I love remembering. I love that. And the fact is, if I go out shooting, I would prefer to go out and shoot my muzzleloader. The fact I just love, that's much more enjoyable to me any day of the week than shooting my rifle. I just like the past. And yeah, that means I'm going to be one of those guys. My kids will grow very impatient with me. You know, back in my day, we didn't need the wheel. Your fancy wheels. But there's something to be gained, even for those of you who love the new thing, of being properly grounded in the past. And we live in an era in which there is the accidental losing of the past, and actually a concerted effort on the part of some to erase the past. And really what the Bible does is it properly grounds us in the past, and there's a difference. And I'd like you to pay attention to that today, because as leadership goes forward and as Joshua leads his people into a new era, he properly grounds them in the past. And as they head forward to new things and a brand new way of living, which they have never lived, they're adopting lifestyles and an environment which they've never had. Notice that this generation that's coming out of the wilderness has always lived in tents, and they are about to go into a place where they will not move, where they will live in fixed houses, where they will live off the land in an agricultural way, and they have never lived that way before. They are going to be adopting and transforming their culture into a new thing. And actually, they're going to adopt new technology. And what is interesting is before the advent into the land, Israel had basically lived in the same technology as well as everything else that they had 400 years before. And as they go into the land, their whole world changes. And actually, one of the things that distinguishes Israel, archaeologically speaking, is that they have nothing that's invented within or nothing that's their own. They tend to adopt the culture, the technology, the advancements of the world around them. They didn't have their own pottery. They didn't have their own art. They just weren't those people. And as they head into the future, how do they stay grounded, not frozen in the past, but properly grounded there? And folks, this is important. Because you and I are living in a world that is rapidly changing in its mindset, in its culture, in its technology, in its art, in its literature, in everything. And some of us are going to be prone to react to that by staying rooted in the past, not properly grounded, but really stuck. And some people will be all aghast to run out and embrace the new thing. And both of those extremes are wrong. So how do we go forward in a world that very often will not make sense? How do we go forward hanging on to truth while living in a world in which we deal with stuff is different? How do we do that? And we pick up here in Joshua 4, verse 1. Now it came about when all the nation had finished crossing Jordan that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, "Take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from each tribe, and command them, saying, 'Take up for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet are standing firm, and carry them over with you, and lay them down in the lodging place where you will lodge tonight.'" So Joshua called the 12 men whom he'd appointed for the sons of Israel, one man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, "Cross again to the ark of the Lord God in the middle of the Jordan. Each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. Let this be a sign among you, so that when your children ask later, saying, 'What do these stones mean to you?' then you will say to them, 'Because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant, and when it crossed Jordan, and the waters of the Jordan were cut off, so these stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever.'" And thus the sons of Israel did as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, just as the Lord spoke to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. And they carried them over with them to the lodging place and put them down there. And then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing. And they are there to this day for the priest who were carrying standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything was completed that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. Now you'll notice here that as they head into the land, Joshua becomes very, very focused on this one action that most people would sort of bypass, but it's absolutely important. And I don't want you to forget it. Joshua says, as they are crossing into the land, and we're about to look at it, as they cross into the land, they're actually prepared for war. There are 40,000 of them that are in battle array, and they're ready to fight if they need to. But regardless of that, as they go in, Joshua says, as you guys are crossing Jordan, and as these waters are stacking up in one heap, as you look out north towards Edom, and you see those waters, pause. Each one of you from each tribe, 12 tribes, 12 stones. And each one of you gets one guy. That guy's going to pick up a rock from the middle of the river, haul it up to the place where we're going to lodge tonight. We're going to put them there. Not only that, as Joshua goes through the river, he stops there at where the priests are, and they take the time to take 12 more stones and stack those up. And there's a specific purpose. The purpose is, he says, as they look at this in the future and your children say to you, what does this mean? What's that doing there? You say, this is where we crossed. And folks, what we find here is that Joshua understands something. And I think he understands it intuitively. I think he understands it from a leadership standpoint. I think he understands it from the command of the Lord, that remembering the past properly gives us an appreciation of how to live in the future and how to do it rightly. Notice here that the goal is not somehow to freeze at this spot of Gilgal where the miracle is occurring, or even before in the wilderness where they're following God around. And there are a lot of people who would want exactly that. After 40 years, you get used to something. For those of you who have only been married 20 years like me, at 40, you'll get used to it. 20 probably is not enough time to get used to the married thing. Or any other thing. But after 40 years, you get used to something. Every day for 40 years, they had gotten up and they saw the pillar of God. Every day they had gotten up and the manna was on the ground. Every day they'd gotten up and they'd fed their animals. They had watered their, they had walked through the desert. And they learn to live that way. And you know what? That may not have been heaven on earth, but it was what they knew. Do you ever do that? You ever gravitate to something just because it's what you knew, even though it's not great? You ever have that happen? Where to do the new thing or the thing that's more right or the thing that promises more reward is just too much trouble, too much scary, too much of a bother. Well, that's me with technology. Adam with his little iPad out there, and he's showing me. He does this when he's working it, you know. And I get confused. I don't want to look at it. I'm like, just show me the picture. And there's always, wait, hold on a second. Well, he's here a minute ago. And literally, it gets violent. And he's like, oh. Dude, just call me when you get it. I don't want to look at it. It's just too much bother for me. I can't deal with it. Well, that's where we are. Yes, it's always been this way, and it's not great, but it's what I know. It's not great, but it's home. It's not what God would want it to be, but it says, Mert. Sure, we fight all the time, but I'm used to it. I mean, how miserable. I mean, I've had people say that to me. Sure, we fight all the time, but I'm used to it. Oh, why don't you change that? Nah. We get used to things and we sit there. And I bet walking into the land, for some people, I can guarantee you, they're sitting on the east side of the Jordan looking into the land, and they're going, why do we have to do this? Can't we just do this forever? Next generation. God, take the next generation in. At least I know what I'm getting. And setting up a tent every night, it's not that bad. Who needs a house? Mowing the grass? Can't we just rent? And the idea of doing the new thing scares us. And as Joshua heads into the land, he pauses to say, this is where God changed our lives. This is the demarcation point. And notice what he picks. He picks River Rock. Now, I want you to notice, Israel's full of stone. Why couldn't they just walk up the bank, grab whatever's handy, stack it up, and say, all right, now we know this is the spot. Joshua takes the time to pick river stone. You know what river stones look like, right? It's rubbed. It's raw. It's different. These were the rocks that were going to stand out. And so he hauls 12 of these things up and probably decent-sized rocks, 70, 80 pounds, shoulder-sized rock, a rock you can carry on your shoulder difficultly, right? It's hard. And they haul these 12 stones up and they stack them. And on their own, it would not have been an impressive sight, but on the road down to the Jordan, you've got these rocks that are different from all the other rocks around. And little kids would have been walking along with their parents, looking at this sea of rock that is Israel. And there they would have come across this stacked up 12 stones, very purposeful set of stones that are worn smooth on the edges. And they'd say, Dad, what's this? Well, son, that's where God changed our lives. That's when we used to do it this way, but we moved into the land and we followed God on this path. And you'll notice they do not go into Israel and duplicate the life that they had in the wilderness. God actually is weaning them off miracle and calling them to a life of obedience. He's weaning them off of his provision and is now providing through their own work. And notice it is God still providing. God still has to cause the rain. God still has to cause the nature to work properly for his people to survive. But he's changing the methodology. He's changing the mechanism. And his people have to adjust. But they take time to remember. Do you do this in your Christian life? I had a professor in Bible college years ago. He kept a record called All the Things That God Did. And I always admired him for it. I never had the personal discipline to do it. I kept saying, maybe I'll do that one of these days. And I just never did. You know how that is. And now it's been too late. So I'm not even going to start. How's that for a cop-out? But he kept a record of all the things that God did. Where he and his wife would come up to a point in their lives, in their marriage, in their schooling, whatever, where there would be a miraculous provision of the Lord, and he would take the time, and it was called building an Ebenezer. An Ebenezer is basically a memorial. So, just so you know, the name Ebenezer means memorial. So, good boy's name, good solid boy's name, Ebenezer. Just want to throw that out there. And he would take the time and he'd write, God did this today. And you know, my life is filled with those things. I have not taken the time to write them down. But my life is filled with those things. I remember the first time this happened in a palpable way. I was in my second year of Bible college and I was really broke. I wasn't quite sure how I was going to make the next quarter's payment, and I was sort of struggling, trying to put the money together, and I walked to my mailbox that day, and I opened it up, and there was a slip in there that somebody had donated $400 towards my education. And I remember standing there beside my mailbox, because I knew this happened to people, but it had never happened to me. And I stood there, and I went, wow, God provided. But my life's been that. I had planned on being single, but God plopped this woman in my life. And it was like Christmas morning. And you just never, you never know. But man, when you see God do, take the time to remember, do you live that way? Well, it'll show up in a couple of things. First of all, if you understand that God's working in your life, it changes the way you live in the areas where you don't want to change. Let me put it this way. If God's providing in your life, you should take that as a cue to change those character flaws that of which you are still struggling. You really should. And if God has provided in the past, would that not also give us hope for what He might do in the future? Well, what's your panic response? What's your panic level? God's provided, He's provided, He's provided, He's provided. Uh-oh, we've got a bill. And we panic. And yet He's provided. My wife and I have always referred to ourselves as the even Stevens. If we get a little extra money coming in, we know it's going somewhere. And if we get a bill, we also know God's going to provide. We don't panic anymore. It should have that effect in your life. If you're still panicking like God doesn't provide, but you recognize that God's provided, guess what? There's a mental disconnection in your head. You're thick. That's really what it is. And Joshua takes the time to say, let us pause. Now, I want to deal with a textual error or a textual issue. Some people look at the book of Joshua and they say, okay, the book of Joshua was written much later than the events of Joshua, and it was written probably during the time of David's reign to justify David's reign, and so we have a recordation of Rahab who becomes his ancestor, this sort of thing. But actually, with all of the reference in in Deuteronomy, in the books of the law, first five books, Pentateuch, that's what I want. With all the references to the Pentateuch of Moses writing, and God saying, write this, and so Moses wrote, we really have to conclude that the events of Moses' day were written during the time of Moses. We would also conclude, or at least suspect, that the events of Joshua's day were recorded in much the same way. I tend to think that way. But here's the thing. As Joshua or whomever is putting together the finishing touches of this book, they stick in here that these stones that Joshua placed were here unto this day. That is, unto the day where this book is still being written. Even now, those stones are there. Okay? So, if we go with an early date for Israel's entrance in the land, I don't think we really have a choice to. We're putting it around 1400 B.C. Well, David is reigning sometime around 900, 950, 1000 B.C. So, there's a 400 years there. Difference. And I got to tell you, if they're saying that this book was written very late, I have a tough time believing this stack of stones was still standing there 400 years later. With all the wars, with the period of the judges, with all of the wars back and forth between the Philistines and the various tribes, I have a tough time believing that by the time David is reigning that these stones are still there. I don't know, it's just an argument. I think probably the finishing touches on this book were probably put together during the time of the judges, which immediately follows Joshua, but for maybe 50 to 100 years afterwards, that the stack of stones still meant something. And notice the two stacks. One's in the river, one's up on the land. I just have a tough time believing that 400 years later, this random set of rocks is still sitting in its spot. So I look at the person who says, oh, this is a late date. Somebody just wrote this book. I say, really? I mean, come on, you have to look at some of this stuff. So, that's the textual issue I wanted to deal with. Now, we pick up at verse 11. When it came about, when all the people finished crossing, that the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over before the people, and the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over in battle array before the sons of Israel, just as Moses had spoken to them, about 40,000 equipped for war crossed for battle before the Lord, to the desert plain of Jericho, on the day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of Israel, so that they revered him just as they revered Moses all the days of his life. Now the Lord said to Joshua, command all the priests who carry the Ark of the Testimony to come up from the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. And it came about when the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant up of the Lord had come up from the middle of the Jordan, the soles of the priest's feet were lifted up to dry ground, that the waters of the Jordan returned to its place and went over all its banks as it did before it returned to its flood stage, just as it had been before. Everything returned to normal. But notice that as Joshua's leading his people forward, he goes forward setting up the memorial, but also ready. He's a great leader. Joshua is one of those perfect combinations between looking at what God has called him to and looking at God's provision, while at the same time saying, we also need to be faithful and obedient. So as Joshua goes into the land, he sets up memorial stones while he's expecting a miracle. Now, some people, especially the miracle-minded, might say, look, if God's stacking up the water up at Adam, and he's doing this miracle to bring us in, first of all, God's obviously doing a miracle, and he's not going to leave us in the lurch. Second of all those people up in the bleachers, up on the side of those mountains, looking down in the valley, seeing this miracle, are going to be too scared to do anything. So we don't need any guards. We don't need to have anybody ready to fight. Let's just walk in. It'll be fine. Joshua says, well, all of this is true, but I want to be ready. And as Joshua crosses over to the border, as he crosses into that land, he still has his army ready. He still lives in the practical, real world, which is looking for his part. What am I called to do? Joshua never, ever sides on the part of passivity, but is constantly thinking and acting as if the world's a real place. But not only that, notice, as Joshua goes, he's constantly taking responsibility. And remember what we define leadership as. Leadership is taking responsibility for more than yourself, which is why men in the home are to be the leader. They are supposed to take responsibility and embrace responsibility for all these people. As a result, they leave passivity at the door. They've got to leave sin at the door. They've got to leave a lot of stuff at the door in order to lead. But also, they don't just sit back and say, God will take care of it. They go forward with practical steps they can do to proactively prepare. And so Joshua does that. But notice, amidst all of those preparations, amidst God's people moving into the land, Joshua takes the time to set up memorial. And he sets up a memorial because Joshua wants to properly ground God's people in the past, even as they go into the future. We know what's going to happen as they cross into the land proper. They're going to disperse. They're going to go north and south. They're going to conquer the whole of the land. These memorial stones remember what God has done. They properly account for God's miracle in the past to fuel the future. And so we keep reading. Verse 17. 18. And it came about when the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant up, the Lord had come from the middle of the Jordan, the soles of the priest's feet were lifted up on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and went over all its banks. Everything goes back to as it had before, as if nothing had happened. Now the people came up from Jordan on the 10th of the first month and encamped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they taken from Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the sons of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. Isn't that great about kids? What is this? Have you noticed your own children asking, Mom, Dad, how did you meet? How did we get here? You know, for you, for most of you, that's an easy question. Well, we've always lived here. McKim and I have moved around a lot. I remember we moved 8 times in our first 5 years of marriage. Different places. Always a different place. Always leaving in the middle of the night. Always in a hurry. Mom, Dad, why are we moving? Shh. It really wasn't that bad. But God knows this about kids. Have you told your kids your past? And I know from those of you who are from difficult backgrounds, who were saved later in life, you have stories that you always want to forget. Don't let those stories be forgotten. And sure, there's a certain editorial process in which you tell your kids your past. I can understand that. But have you framed, man, I used to be this person, but God has brought me here. Have you framed it that way? I remember when we left Northern Virginia, we left the only place my children had ever known as home. It was their root. And we framed it exactly as we believed it. God is moving us from this place. As much as we love it, as much as we call this home, God is moving us. We frame it in what we believe to be true. Have you framed that way? God provided my wife to me. He dropped her in my lap in the middle of Psychology 101. The most boring, dull, horrible class he could have possibly constructed so that I would pay more attention to her than the class. I believe God did that. I really do. Have you framed your past as God doing something? That properly roots your children there. Not that we want to live there. Good Lord, I would never want to go back to being the person my wife married the day after we got married. I can't honestly imagine why she did. I'm a much better husband now than I was then. I don't want to stay grounded or stuck in the past. I want to be properly rooted there, where I look at the miracle that has accomplished our lives and say, God did this, but we are different now because of what he's done. Frame your history that way to your kids. And you know what memorial stones are these days? We don't set up a lot of memorial stones, but we do have photo albums. As your kids page through those, have you taken the time to explain to them from a spiritual perspective how different you are now than you were then? The person that God saved you from to the person he's creating you to be? The life that we once had to a life that is now different, but within God's will? Take that time. Take that time. It's the biggest instructing tool you have to create a generation that not only avoids the mistakes of the past, but can extend that walk into something future. God understood, and Joshua understood, that remembering puts us in a frame of mind to be educated as we go forward and to be changed without failure. He understood that. And so, as God's people come up, he puts it in terms your kids will need to know. Verse 22, then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jericho, of Jordan before you, until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed. That all these people of the earth may know that the hands of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Notice that. There's a connection in the past, and the past is connected to the past. Do you notice that? The seminal miracle in the Old Testament, the thing that made Israel Israel, was the crossing of the Red Sea. When they came out of Egypt, and it's bigger than that. The crossing of the Red Sea is attached to Passover, which is attached to God's judgment on a powerful nation, which is attached to the freedom, which is attached to the promises made to Abraham. It's a huge thing, but the crossing of the Red Sea was the seminal miracle that identified Israel as Israel. And then as that next generation crosses into the land, he duplicates the miracle. He duplicates it so that they may know, and Joshua has the good sense to know, look, we've got to do something to remember. How do we teach our children what we have experienced? And God gives him instruction here on how. But notice these things are linked like pearls on a string, activity of God that point to where he wants us to go. Not staying stuck there, not living on one miracle, but walking by faith into the future based on what he's done. Now let me frame it for you in a New Testament sense. The seminal miracle of the Old Testament that made Israel, Israel, was the Passover lamb followed by redemption. That's it. The Passover lamb followed by redemption. Folks, isn't it interesting that the seminal miracle of the New Testament is the Passover lamb followed by redemption, Jesus Christ? What makes the church, the reason you sit here today, the reason you sit here in peace with God, the Passover lamb followed by redemption and the resurrection. Have you taken the time in your life to build a memorial to that? Because that's the thing that makes you the church. That's the thing that makes you a Christian. That's the thing which frames all of the failure you've been through, all of the lostness of your previous life, all the way to where you are now and into the future. When you go through a period of joblessness, have you said to your children, if God has saved our souls and died on a cross for us, will he leave us abandoned? God has done this and this in our lives. He'll provide. God has redeemed us by his very blood. Why would we say he will ever leave us alone? Christian, do you have that kind of memorial in your life? Do you live that way? Well, let me even frame it to a tighter picture. If God has saved me by his blood, should I not change the way I live today? I have a problem with honesty. I have a problem with anger. I have a problem with bitterness. I have a problem with whatever. Should I not be changing? Not stuck in the past of my past sin. Not stuck in the enslavement of what I am by nature. But rather changing because of something supernatural. Is that you? Christian, we live in a world that's changing so fast, I can't believe it. And the technology and the things that people care about and even the plethora of distraction available. Have you taken the time to concentrate on what matters? To go back to those memorials in your life that orient you towards the future? Now that's a question, isn't it? God, as I walk forward in this life of faith, as I walk forward into a world that I may or may not gravitate to, depending on how rooted in the past I am, how amenable I am to new things, as I approach this world, God, keep me grounded in what's true. the thing that makes me who I am, the thing that makes me yours. Let's be those people. Let's go to prayer. Father, we do praise your name. We know you're great. We know you're mighty. But frankly, we forget. Especially as the world changes, either in our view positive or in our view negative, we become so obsessed at times with distraction, so keyed in to something new. Help us to remember to walk by faith even as we live our faith, to go back to that thing which makes us us, your Son on a cross for our salvation. And let us walk forward from that spot remembering, and it's in your name that we pray. Amen.